Welcome to Dodgers Daily. Casey Porter here. So glad you decided to tune in. The Dodgers, they snapped their six-game win streak, a streak that saw them outscore the Mets, the Nats, and the first two games of the Toronto Blue Jays, 43-7. So, hey, it's all good. I mean, when you play 162, there's going to be ups and downs. I will say this, though. We will start with the downs. The Dodgers, I talk all the time. If you follow Dodgers Daily much at all, you know one of my big concerns with this club the last 2 years is the streakiness, the ability to score a million different runs in either a game or a small sample size and then go through long stretches of droughts. I promise I won't go on a tangent about that. But I will say, as good as the Dodgers have been playing lately, it is disappointing that they only scored one run in the last 14 innings. And, you know, because the thing about it is, we know this team has a really high ceiling. Probably a higher ceiling than any other club in the major leagues, meaning when they play well, when they do all the things that they're supposed to, and they hit the ball the way that they're capable of, nobody's going to beat this club, right? So what I'm wanting to see to take out some of the stress when it comes to some of the really stressful parts of the season, whether it be close games or one-run games or extra-inning games, or then eventually the playoffs, what type of floor is this team going to have? When this team isn't going good, is their floor going to be high enough to where they still win a slew of games even when they're not playing at the top cylinder? If you go back to Thursday, Saturday, and then Sunday, those were all lower scoring close games. And so they won two out of three of those. So I think all Dodgers fans, even though you didn't win on Sunday, you did have the rally in the eighth inning. You had the tying run on second base with nobody out. And hey, by the way, the Blue Jays, they walked Freddie Freeman this time. They were not going to make that mistake two times or let that mistake happen with Freddie Freeman two times in a row. So you did win two out of three games in what I call floor games, meaning, hey, you didn't play to your ceiling. You kind of played to your lowest floor, and you still won two out of three of those. So from that aspect of it, I think the Dodgers head into Arizona very excited about where they're at. Michael Grove, hey, we've talked about with him, it's the consistency, man. I mean, he's been really good at times. He got the ball with the start today, went two innings, gave up the three runs. He tried to pitch backwards. He tried to feature that slider that has become his best pitch. And the thing about that is, if you're landing that slider or whatever off-speeded pitch it is that you're trying to pitch backwards with, if you're landing that for a strike, that's great because now you're very, very, very unpredictable. But if you're not landing that off-speed pitch for a strike, in this case for Michael Grove, his slider, now it's the exact opposite. You're becoming even more predictable than if you started off with a fastball, because if you get behind the count 1-0 and you've already fired a bullet, which is an off-speed pitch, now guess what the hitter knows is coming. They know that fastball is coming. Go back to the home run that he gave up, center cut fastball, ambushed, and that did some damage there. So Michael Grove struggled. The one thing that I probably come away with this team the most discouraged about, and again, we're not going to get negative on this show, because when you win 6 out of 7, you outscore your opponents 43-7 in a six-game win streak, and they're on the road like the Dodgers have been, there is nothing to be negative about, because in the game of baseball, sometimes you don't hit, sometimes you don't score, and sometimes you don't win. But I have to admit, only scoring one run in the last 14 innings is a little disappointing. So, hey, haven't talked to you since Friday morning when Coach Holt joined us. Thoroughly enjoyed that show. I hope you guys did too. So let's talk about Friday's game. Shohei Ohtani coming back to Toronto. I hope the Toronto fans are happy with themselves, because when you take a guy like Shohei Ohtani, who is super motivated to be one of the best, if not the best in the world to begin with, and it's called adding fuel to his fire. Whenever you motivate him the way that they did by booing him, you get what you got. Man, you mess with the bull, you get the horn. That's what the Toronto fans did. They got the horn of Shohei Ohtani. He got that series off with a bang, with a big, big, big home run. And I tell you what, there are 162 games in a season. There's so many great moments and ups and downs. It's hard to remember any one individual moment, like if you think back to your playing career or even parts of your, maybe even your coaching career or whatever. It's hard to remember like exact games or exact things that happen in certain games. So it takes something really special to stick out and remember. But I think Shohei Ohtani going back to Toronto, getting booed, and then hitting the home run, I think that's one of the moments this year that I will remember even as the season ends and we go to the offseason. That was just a really, really, really cool moment. How about Friday? Six hitters at multi-hit games. Mookie Betts, Will Smith, Max Muncy, Teo Hernandez, Andy Páez, who, by the way, we're going to feature him here in just a second, and Gavin Lux all had multi-hit games. Anytime you have six guys that have multi-hit games, you know it's going to be a good day on offense, especially when two of those players had three hits. That would be Max Muncy and Will Smith. Will Smith actually had four hits on the night. I've been telling you all offseason, the way the Dodgers constructed this roster, that Will Smith was primed to have a huge year just because of the hitters around him, the type of pitches he's going to see, and because of his elite plate discipline, he's just going to have pitch after pitch after pitch that he can hit, and that has happened so far. Will Smith has just been fantastic this year. Three different hitters had home runs. Shohei Ohtani, Max Muncy, and Will Smith, and seven different players on Friday had RBIs. The team also Friday was 7-for-14 with runners in scoring position. I say this all the time, but it doesn't feel like it. But as of late, like the last week or two, the Dodgers actually have been very, very good with runners in scoring position. They were 7-for-14 on Friday, and they had three stolen bases all in the six-run third inning. So it wasn't all about hitting home runs. The Dodgers also stole bases, and the thing about that is anytime the pitcher has to be at least somewhat distracted by you, that means their total focus isn't on the hitter. That leads to mistakes that can be hit out of the ballpark. Plus, whenever you put yourself in scoring position, now as a hitter, instead of feeling like you need to hit an extra base hit to score the run, now you feel like you can shorten up, you can just put the ball in play and just hit a single somewhere and still score that run, especially when that runner is Mookie Betts and he can run and you know he will score for second base most of the time on a single. So it completely changes the focus and the approach from the hitter at the plate, from extra base hit slugging to just shorten up, get a base hit, let's score this run. So, hey, how about Gavin Stone? Let's get into some talk on him. Super, super, super proud of Gavin Stone. When you look at what he did Friday night, that was a performance. When we've talked about all of the adjustments that he made, go all the way back to my talk with Alex Friedman, the AAA play-by-play voice for AAA Oklahoma City. He mentioned all the different adjustments that Gavin Stone made last year. At the beginning of last year, he did not have his two-seam. They had ditched that out of his arsenal. They added the two-seam back, which gave him a little bit of a right turn. Then they added the cutter. And those were the two pitches that Gavin Stone featured the most Friday night. So this time last year, he didn't have a cutter and he didn't have his two-seam in his arsenal. So what would have happened to him this time last year is he would have been trying to force his changeup, of which he did not throw for a strike. And I'll tell you this, don't get discouraged with that, because that changeup is just a pitch. I've talked to several of these guys about that. It's not something to be worried about, because it's not something you can really control. You show up and you grip the changeup and you throw it, and you really either have the feel for it or you don't. So here is the great part of where Gavin Stone is at right now. This is what the organization has done for him. As much as they love high-riding four-seams and tumbling change-ups, what they really love are successful pitchers and getting outs. And so they gave Gavin Stone the arsenal to, whenever his change-up is not landing, he can still be a very, very, very good major league pitcher like he was Friday night. How? The cutter and the two-seam. So what that does for him is, instead of being a strikeout pitcher like the changeup gives him, the changeup definitely gives him swing and miss, what now he's going to be is just kind of that college pitcher where you're out there and you're just trying to pitch to weak contact. You're turning the ball slightly left to get on the end of barrels. You're turning the ball slightly right with the two-seam to get in on the hands, and you're really trying to create soft contact, something that Gavin Stone did all night long on Friday, to the point to where he was so efficient with it. And another thing, weak contact versus striking out. Striking out is great, right? But it also isn't always efficient, meaning it might take 6 or 7 pitches to get guys struck out. So your pitch count is elevating. Well, how about this? Because Gavin Stone was able to turn the ball left with his cutter, turn the ball right with his two-seam, and was able to basically bypass the changeup to be a successful major league pitcher, something of which he made that adjustment with at the end of last year. Because of that, he averaged 13 pitches an inning. So not only was he totally effective, he also was totally efficient as well. This, my friends, was the performance that showed you all the adjustments that Gavin Stone made. And beyond just the results, when you look at both, sometimes the process, you know, we talk about the process over results. I talked about that with Gavin Lux last time. Sometimes the process actually meets up perfectly with the results, and that was Gavin Stone on Friday. So in a lot of ways, it showed that Gavin Stone cannot have his A arsenal, which would be his changeup for all the swing and miss, has the changeup and he's getting it for tumble and swing and miss. He's going to get major league outs when it's in the strike zone, right? That gives him margin for error with his four seam. And by the way, throwing that cutter in the two seam that's turning both different ways, that also makes your four seam seem a lot faster. That's why that margin for error, it made Toronto, it just, they weren't able to time it up. They were a little bit late on it because it had a little bit more hop to it than the cutter and or the two-seam did. So not only did it miss barrels, it also gave him margin for error with his four-seam, and it made it to where he didn't have to land his changeup for a strike to have a successful major league outing. So in a lot of ways, this is the most excited I have been about Gavin Stone. How about Andy Páez? Wow. This dude, I'll tell you what, he took a sinker in on the hands and inside out of the thing to right field. Then he took a slider and he hit it to left field. Now, the reason why he's able to do this, so what Andy Páez is doing right now is he is hitting every shape, he's hitting every quadrant of the zone, and the reason why he's able to do that is because he's allowing the ball to get deep. The deeper you let the ball get, the more you get to see spin, the more you see location. And then also, why Andy Páez, in my opinion, has a major league swing. He has a very flat path with his hands. His hands come through the zone fairly flat, right? When I say flat, I don't mean the barrel. I mean the path of his hands. Think of that airplane landing on a runway. That's how you really want your hands to come through the zone. Where think about that, like a pilot's practicing landing and then taking back off. Think of that as your hands coming, because if you come down too far, you're going to crash, right? So just slightly down, land on the runway through the strike zone, and then slightly back up to take back off. That needs to be the path of your hands. That's Andy Páez, okay? But at the same time, he turns the barrel with that top hand and creates a north-south bat angle. When I say north-south, I mean kind of up and down versus bring the barrel in kind of parallel to the ground. It's more perpendicular to the ground. And because of that, he gets that flat path of the hands, but yet a north-south bat angle. He's able to cover the top of the zone with that flat path of his hands. And then he's also able to cover both the east and west parts of the zone. So the flat hands get you to the top of the zone. And then the north and south bat angle gets you both to the inside part of the zone, the outside part of the zone, and the bottom of the zone. He has the best of all worlds. And then also he allows the ball to get deep, which allows him to identify spin, which means he's not having to hit the ball out front of him so far, which makes you jumpy. We see Gavin Lux, that happens to him from time to time, and he's strong enough to do it. So, hey, Andy Páez is just simply on fire right now. He has every single tool. He has an absolute big league swing, everything about it. He has a good plan. And then also, it's one thing to have a good plan – but it's another to get in the major leagues and actually execute it, something that Andy Páez is doing right now. So, hey, if you're a Dodgers fan, of course, and let me say this, Andy Páez runs hot and cold. I've seen him have cold periods, too, at Double-A Tulsa at the beginning of last year. Very cold period. So, hey, this thing will turn. Andy Páez will not be this hot for his entire career. There will be a period to where he has to make adjustments. But because of the way he swings, because of the way he lets the ball get deep, I just think the adjustments are going to be a lot easier for him than they would be for a lot of guys, especially when you figure in the amount of just simply talent and confidence that he has. That's one thing I think you can see with him, just his swag. Austin Chubb, who managed him for 3 years in a row in rookie ball in 2019, then also managed him at Rancho and then also at Great Lakes, because you remember Rancho and Great Lakes actually swapped which one was low A and high A. So Austin Chubb actually got to manage Andy Páez for 3 years in a row. And the way that he put it is, he knows he's good. Andy Páez knows he's good, but he's not arrogant. He has that type of swag to him. So nothing not to like. And by the way, the best part of his game is his right arm. And by the way, I think he's registered as the second best sprint speed in a small sample size so far. So that 25 pounds that he's lost, he hasn't lost any power, but yet he has gained speed. So lots to like about him. Saturday game, that's that floor game I'm talking about. Hey, we know you're going to win the games when you score a million different runs. Like the Thursday game, I was so excited to see that the Dodgers can win games in those. Hey, what is the bottom floor for you? Where's the bottom floor go for you? So super excited about that, especially considering that every single player in the lineup on Saturday had a hit. And you also won a game with just two extra base hits and no home runs. So there's your floor, only two extra base hits, no home runs. That's basically the floor of this offense, although we saw on Sunday only one run last 14 innings. There's going to be outlying periods of time to where you do go below your floor or above your ceiling, but those are outliers. So what we're wanting to see is, what is this offense consistently? I think what you saw on Saturday is the bottom floor with only two extra base hits and no home runs, only 3 for 12 with runners in scoring position. And so I think that's your floor, but super exciting that the Dodgers were still able to win that game, even in a bottom floor type offensive game. How about Chris Taylor? Got the hit up the middle. If you follow my website, any of the YouTube stuff on Dodgers Daily, I have been saying, since he came through Oklahoma City in 2016, this guy has to think up the middle, because he has such lift to his swing, his hands lift, and his barrel is also below his hands with a negative bat angle. We just talked about that with Andy Páez, how he creates that north-south bat angle, meaning that bat is below your hands. Chris Taylor does that very early in his swing, but unlike Andy Páez, who keeps his hands relatively flat through the hitting zone, Chris Taylor lifts his hands. And so to think up the middle, that allows him to force himself to get the ball deeper. And when he does that, his barrel and hands aren't lifting quite as much. And because his barrel and hands aren't lifting quite as much, that's going to create more consistency for him. So if you just go back to that hit, you can see as soon as he hit it, those hands started lifting, that barrel started lifting really bad, but he had hit the ball before all that happened. Just go back and look at that hit, and you can see all of that in action. So I was really glad to see Chris Taylor get that hit. Hopefully, he can start hitting that ball up the middle and get consistent, because that would really, really solve a lot of problems on this Dodgers team. Joe Kelly, Ryan Brazier, Evan Phillips, the A-team bullpen, they did their job, no doubt about that. Joe Kelly now has gone scoreless in 7 out of his last 8 outings, and Ryan Brazier has gone scoreless in his last 2. So again, hey, it's kind of like the series to where you lost, but you won the last game. It kind of left you at least with a decent taste in your mouth. If you lose the last game of the series, although you won 2 out of 3 and you've been playing so good, it does leave you with a little bit of a bad taste in your mouth, but not much here, man. I mean, you're talking about a really fun series going to Arizona. You're talking about outscoring your opponents 43-7 in the previous 6 games. You're talking about an offense that has just been simply fantastic. Tyler Glass now, by the way, was just absolutely ridiculous again. And I tell you, I said this again, but when you know that you're going to go out and win your game with your ace, like Tyler Glass now has done for this team, it doesn't just affect that day. Coach Holt talks about it all the time. Dave Roberts going, hey, we got Glass now coming up in 2 days from today. He can start planning how he's going to win the games 2 and 3 days before Glass now pitches, because he knows when Glass now goes out there, the Dodgers are winning that day. So it affects the games prior to when he pitches, the games after he pitches. So when you have a guy like Tyler Glass now that's going out there and just injecting the amount of confidence into his team like he is, it is a huge factor, more than just the wins and losses on the days that he pitches. So, hey, that's my segment on the Los Angeles Dodgers. Again, they head to the Arizona Diamondbacks. Going to be a lot of fun. Austin's going to join us here on the other side. So let's not waste more time. Let's get right to it, and let's take a trip down on the farm. And you're seeing right here, it's going to be heavy on the pitching. Kenny George did make his way back offensively. He was out for about 5 days due to a hamstring. Stole a couple of bases in his game back, slapped one to left field. So it was good to see him back. But this is Patrick Copen. And, hey, another just absolutely great outing for Copen. He went 4 and 1/3 innings, no hits given up, no runs, 7 strikeouts, 7 walks. 2023 drafty, obviously huge upside. The deal is here, the Dodgers went with upside. They went with body and frame and potential, and just trying to get him in the strike zone was goal number one once they drafted him last summer. They have done that for the most part. Now, obviously, you have the entire minor league setting. You wouldn't think that a guy like this is anywhere as close to maybe 2 or 3 years away from being in the major leagues, probably at the minimum. So you have a long run here to figure out all of the intricacies to make Patrick Copen. Not, we know the stuff right now. If he went out and he executed perfectly, you know, all these guys can get a major leaguer out at this point. But it's going to be about getting consistent over his minor league career. 4-seam, 2-seam cutter, slider, and curveball. And again, using the minor league system to master his control, which would be just getting the ball in the strike zone. And then also his command, which is actually hitting your spots once you're in the zone. This is 6'6", Jose Rodriguez. He is an absolute strikeout machine. Look at that tall drink of water. And look how he kind of Louis Tiants his windup. So he shows you his back if you're the hitter. You see that right there. Let me back that up so you can kind of see as a hitter what you're seeing right there. You don't see anything. I mean, you're definitely not seeing the baseball whenever he comes through. Let me actually slow this down so we can get even a better look at the delivery of Jose Rodriguez, because he has struck out everybody. Now, see right there, can't see the ball. Still can't see the ball. And just you don't see the ball until it's right out of his hand. Then he's 6'6". He gets great extension. And the ball is almost all the way to home plate. You can see right here, the hitter is just now picking up the baseball, and it's halfway to home plate. So Jose Rodriguez, he struck out 6 yesterday. So like I said, he has absolutely been a strikeout machine, Jose Rodriguez. 102 miles an hour yesterday. That's from a starting pitcher. That's what Engardo Enriquez hit yesterday. 102. Now, so you've been to all these minor league facilities, Austin, so have I. Sometimes these guns are hot. Sometimes they're a little bit off. Who knows? But I can tell you that the 100-mile-an-hour aspect of it, where Edgardo Enriquez hits 100 consistently, that is not an exaggeration whatsoever. Now, when I saw 102, actually heard 102, I was like, eh, well, we'll see. Who knows with the in-stadium radar gun. But the 100, I totally buy, absolutely 100%. By the way, that 102 came from the Quakes play-by-play voice, Mike Linscog, and he also, check this out, 92-mile-an-hour slider. 92-mile-an-hour slider for Edgardo Enriquez. Struck out 7 hitters, and hey, you can see the hitters in this video. I mean, when you're throwing 102 with a 90, look at that hitter right there. They're like, what do you do with that? I mean, what do you do, right? I mean, when a guy's throwing 102 and then 92, really there's only 2 words of advice, and that is good luck, right?
That is the only thing that you can tell these hitters, because the velocity of which he throws, regardless of whether it was 100, 102, Edgardo Henriquez is throwing gas, and he's going to throw it by most hitters that he faces. Low A hitters are really struggling to be able to make contact. And I tell you what, that's not just a low A issue. This is going to be a continuing issue for hitters that go up against Edgardo Henriquez as he moves up levels, because of that velocity, because of the ability to generate swings and misses at a very high rate.
So continuing with the pitching, and I wanted this to be heavy on the pitching theme, just so you could see just how many power arms Rancho Cucamonga has on their team right now. You went from Patrick Copen, who we know is a guy that's going to approach 100, probably will hit 100 in his career as a starter, to Jose Rodriguez, who's 6'6", and he's striking out everybody, to Edgardo Henriquez, who hit 102, to you finish the game with Ronaldo Yen, who hit 101. Man, this is some absolute gas. I know, Austin, you're smiling because, you know, these guys are headed your way to Great Lakes. And when Ronaldo Yen is in the strike zone, like all of these other young power arms, it's just, it's good night. I mean, there's just... he's just almost impossible to hit. He struck out the side in yesterday's outing, had 11 strikeouts in 5 1/3 innings. And surprise, surprise, with all that power stuff, he's yet to allow a run, has given up just 2 hits, and his whip is just 0.94. And that's only because he's walked some guys, right? That whip is not because of giving up base hits or anything like that. So Ronaldo Yen, another power arm for the Loons that I wanted to highlight, because this guy, we've known about him for a while. Tim Rogers did a good feature on him last year over there at Dodgers 2080. You can go check that out, but this is a very exciting closer type guy. Okay, we're going to move up to your level now, Austin, where you got to see in person Peter Hubeck. Hubeck added that slider last year. He has that spike curveball that he actually taught Jared Karros. And by the way, you know, a couple years ago, at the about 3/4 of the way through the year, him and his pitching coaches at Rancho, they had a conversation. Hey, what should my mix be? What pitches should I be throwing? What do I need to do to become a consistent professional? They put together a plan. They gave him a slider. He spikes the curveball. And since then, since the end of, I believe it was the 2022 season, going into last year, he has been just really, really good and becoming more and more consistent with every outing. Again, he had another great outing on Friday. Four innings, 3 hits, no runs, 8 strikeouts, and a walk. That spike breaking ball that you got to see with your own eyes, he spikes it so he can get more 12-6 on it, because you get more pressure on the ball going down. That's just simply an elite pitch. The fastball is good velo, and he settled in on a great mix that he can throw with different sequences on a consistent basis. So what'd you see with Peter Hubeck with your own eyes?
He's able to find ways to put up zeros, and that is an essential gutsy part of being a starting pitcher, is that this is Peter Hubeck pitching for, on this night, Los Pepinillos Picantes del Norte, yeah, in the beautiful Pepinillos jerseys, which I believe was the first time they got to wear them on the road. It's really cool to see, and I love to see Peter Hubeck be able to put up this performance in Fort Wayne as well, because if you remember last year, I believe it was in Fort Wayne when Peter Hubeck made his high A debut.
Yeah,
and it was a struggle of a performance in Fort Wayne, to say the least. To see the rebound that he has, last year he got to pitch against Fort Wayne in the playoffs and dominated, and he continued that this season in this outing in the ballpark where there was some struggle. Even when there was times when there was runners on base, he found a way to put up zeros. I love that level of character from Peter Hubeck.
Another guy that we should have talked about with his last outing, and we did not get to him. I'm still kicking myself for that, because, hey, we like, if you earned it in Dodgers Day, that you get it. Doesn't matter if you're a top 30 prospect. Doesn't matter if you're the last prospect in the system. If you've earned the recognition and the coverage, you get it on Dodgers Day. They didn't give it to Christian Romero last time, and I'm still kicking myself for that, if you can't tell. But, hey, we got to him this time. Off to a great start. for High A Great Lakes. His ERA is just 1.72 on the year. He's gone scoreless in three out of his four outings. Yesterday, five innings, two hits, no runs, four strikeouts, and three walks. So this is a guy, he is a professional pitcher. We talk about all these power arms, and I'm not saying, see that change up there? I'm not saying Christian Romero doesn't have a good fastball, but what he is a kind of the Landon Knack of the Great Lakes, if you will. He's going to locate, he's going to move the ball, he's going to throw changeups, he's going to throw sliders, slash cutters, whatever you want to call it, and he is just going to create weak contact, and he is just going to be a hitter that or a pitcher that hitters do that all day long on, and they go back to the dugout going, dang, man, I just can't get it on the barrel, right?
Yeah. No, Christian Romero is a wizard of generating weak contact. That is what Christian Romero is able to generate. He's going to get a lot of ground balls. He's going to get some weaker fly balls and be able to just avoid barrels. I think that is a really key element of Christian Romero and something that you need in on your pitching staff to be able to fill in innings. And Christian Romero has been able to, whether it's come out the starting role or whether it's come out of a piggyback type role, he's been able to provide a lot of innings to this Great Lakes Loon staff. And he has looked absolutely phenomenal. The pitch mix is there, and it's keeping hitters off balance. They don't really necessarily know what is coming, which is providing a lot of that weak contact. You can throw in Christian Romero and feel good about getting a good 3 to 5 innings out of him, and that is exactly what he has provided every single outing during his tenure for Great Lakes.
Reminds me of Orlando Ortiz Mayer at the AA level for Tulsa as well, kind of that type of pitcher. So when you go from Christian Romero to Christian Suarez that you're seeing on the screen, it's like a violent difference. And you talk about lefty relievers coming out of the pen. Dave Anderson, pitching coach there at Great Lakes, he has been nothing short of a wizard getting everything out of these lefties. Christian Suarez got himself into a jam, hit a guy, had two walks, had the bases loaded before he even realized he was out there on the mound, and then just dug in through that good fastball, but more importantly, through that back foot sweeping slider that he is really, really known for. That's not the big slider yet. You'll see it here in a minute. But Christian Suarez did a good job of buckling down, getting the ball in the strike zone when it mattered, and got himself out of a big jam. So, hey, Suarez, again, we've talked about several times, lots of swing and miss stuff. Got to keep it in the zone, right?
Yeah, in yesterday's game, the key moments came when Christian Suarez was pitching during the entire outing. This is where the six game sweep came down to. So he entered the game, I believe, in the fifth inning, if I'm not mistaken, with a couple of runners on, was able to get out of that performance. Then started out the next inning with three runners allowed on base, bases loaded. Loons are up 4-3. He already got out of one jam where the Tin Caps had an opportunity. So then it's up to Christian Suarez to find a way to navigate and hold the lead if he can, or limit the damage. And he didn't just limit the damage. He caused no damage to the Fort Wayne Tin Caps team, striking out two hitters and then getting the weak ground out, as you saw right there. The word that I used to describe this is gutsy. He's locked in, and looking at the overall performance that he's had this season, he's had dominant performances. This one was gutsy, and this one was extremely impressive, and it is the reason why the Loons won yesterday, and it is so impressive to watch.
No doubt. So, hey, Franklin De La Paz also came in and did a good job. Yes. So did LeVon Reynoso. We will get to them on a different podcast. Wanted to get to the offense because, man, it just seemed like the Loons just scored and scored and scored and scored. Noah Miller, great weekend at the plate, showed his skill as a switch hitter, also showed some power combined with the ability to take the ball the other way. Second home run yesterday, had two doubles over the weekend. So Noah Miller had a really nice weekend.
Yeah, it's really awesome to see Mill be able to do that, to hit a little bit for power. Started off the game a couple of different times. You talk about that double in Los Pepinillos jersey. That was in the first inning to get a run in. And then you talk about that home run that he had just there. that was in the first inning to put the Loons on front to create an advantage for them. He's doing a lot of damage. He's getting some of those extra base hits. He's driving the ball. He's doing a lot of those little things well throughout the game, providing really good, really solid defense. All of the small tools that you want as a baseball player, Noah Miller has in abundance.
Yep. Yeah, from the small tools to the big tools of Alex Freeland, this dude has big talent, and he is doing damage. Three multi-hit games in his last four, and in the Saturday and Sunday games, he had two doubles, a home run, four hits total, and they were all gap-to-gap. That's what I liked about him, is that, hey, he has some swing and miss in his game, and I think that's because sometimes he pulls off the ball trying to pull home runs, right? Well, he was thinking left center to right center, which to me keeps you through the ball a little bit better. That's going to lead to some consistency. 367 on the year, OPS 1142. You're really seeing the good Alex Freeland to start this season.
Not just the good Alex Freeland, I would say it's some of the great Alex Freeland that you are seeing to start this season. All of these skills, all of these tools were in him. And if you watched him play, you could see some of the electric factor that he has, some of the potential that absolutely was there. The numbers didn't completely reflect the level of talent that he has. It's starting to reflect that level of talent. Alex Freeland, absolutely phenomenal. The power is there. He can launch into one-hit home runs. He has the ability to generate and draw a lot of walks. He can go gap-to-gap with power. Right now, he is one of, if not the hottest hitter in the Midwest League. He is absolutely great. And to be able to do that in front of some of his family that came to the games this week, I know I had a chance to interact with them. What great people. The story of Alex Freeland is always building. The competitive nature, the competitive fire.
No doubt about that. Dylan Campbell. I told you, man, this dude just does a little ever. It's not like he's hitting like 137 mile an hour bombs. You know, it's like he just dinks one into left. He three hops one in the left field line. He serves one right up the middle, maybe into right field. He steals three or four bases. And at the end of the weekend, you look and you go, he's like one of the better hitters. And you don't really remember two or three of his hits. You just remember that he was on base every single time that he was on. Of course, there's a nice home run there. And then every single time he gets on base, it seems like he scores. This guy, he is a baseball player, Dylan Campbell.
Yeah, DC is a baseball player. He's a menace out there if you're an opposing team. It is very difficult to find ways to get him out because whatever maneuvers, whatever ways you go to try to attack him, it doesn't seem like they work all the time. And there's a couple of moments during this series where DC was able to just drive in a run when the Loons needed a run, hit the ball the other way to drive in to find ways to get on base, find ways to get base hits. DC, as you mentioned, a baseball player, definitely somebody to watch, providing good defense all around the outfield too, and has a bunch of different tools. Like he can steal a base too. All of these different elements are really cool. Really exciting to see DC put all of these tools together in the Great Lakes Loons uniform. And it was really cool to be able to watch that.
Kyle Nevin also had a really nice weekend. I talk about all the time right there. He stays inside the ball as well as anybody in the game. And because of that, he went 4 for his last 11 and had a great series this weekend. I love the offensive game of Kyle Nevin.
Yeah, Kyle Nevin is showing out. And this is something where all of those numbers were there to start last season. You saw with some of his WRC plus being really solid. He's continuing that trend now that he is playing for the Great Lakes Loons and providing a bunch of different unique ways to get on base, not just with these singles. He's also able to provide power to left field, to right field, to the right center gap. He's able to hit a home run or two. He's going to drive in a lot of runs.
Yep. Hey, the weather is heating up, and so is Tyrone Lorenzo. Been a very, very, very sluggish start for him. Mm-hmm. Not going to sugarcoat that. I don't think he likes the cold weather. I have not actually. I just don't think he likes the cold weather. That's my opinion. Leave that at my opinion. Don't quote me on that because that is Dodgers Daily Opinion. Casey Porter, that's not anything that's not scoop or anything, right? But I think as the weather's warmed up over the weekend, it was close to 80 degrees. Tyrone Lorenzo starting to heat up.
Yeah, he's Leary is starting to heat up, and this is a guy that even with this Loons offense that has been generating a lot of runs, Tyrone Lorenzo has been struggling a little bit. To be completely transparent, you started to see things turn around, and this was his first home run that he had during his tenure with the Loons. Had a second home run as well. Had a couple of extra base hits, and was starting to generate a little bit more contact to where you say, "Oh man, what if?" Tyrone Lorenzo Leary is able to get a little bit more on track. What can this do to this team's offense? And there's a lot of tools. There's a lot of potential still in Tyrone Lorenzo. So I know it's been a little bit of a struggle to start the season. Sometimes that happens with guys, and sometimes that is not the complete picture of the type of player that they are. And that certainly is the case for Tyrone Lorenzo. Watch out, because this offense can become unstoppable.
Okay, moving to the AA level, this is Yainer Fernandez. Yainer's another guy that had a little bit of a slow start as well, but he had a good weekend, back-to-back multi-hit games, and he had three multi-hit games in his last four against Northwest Arkansas, and has hits in his last six out of his last seven games, and went 7-for-17 on the weekend. Austin, I know you're not surprised about Yainer Fernandez starting to get hot.
Yeah, he's going to find ways to get on base. He's going to find ways to be able to hit it where defenders are not. That is part of the skill set that Yainer Fernandez has. I know it has been a little bit of a struggle to start the season. Watch out for Yainer Fernandez. The tools are still there. Fun going guy, hardworking too, and he's going to continue to work on his craft.
Yan Castro also had a good outing. This is one of the per pound strongest players in the entire system. Three innings, one hit, no runs, three strikeouts, two walks, and the changeup. That changeup that he throws is incredible. So incredible strength for Yan Castro and an incredible changeup. So he had a good outing.
Yeah, it is great to see Yan Castro out. So if you aren't familiar with him, and I think a lot of even fans of the Dodgers affiliates might not be as familiar with him. He was picked up in the minor league portion of the Rule 5 draft from the New York Yankees in 2022-2023 offseason. Came and had some outings with the Great Lakes Loons. Spent a lot of time, I believe, just injured at times, if I'm not mistaken. But during the outings that he had, you could see a professional pitcher. Yep. In Yan Castro. And now that he is back, now that he is healthy, now that he is pitching for AA Tulsa, I'm not surprised that they moved him up to AA. A little bit disappointed because they don't get to see him in the Loons uniform, selfishly, but so happy for Yan Castro. Might be underrated. Find out about Yan Castro now, because you will be hearing from him a lot in the future.
Okay, and the last guy we're going to talk about today, we're actually not going to get to AAA Oklahoma City because they were in Albuquerque. That series is just so exhausting because it's like 30 runs every single game, and it's hard to even evaluate what's good and what's not there. So we're going to stop here, and this is going to be our last guy, Kendall Williams. Kendall Williams, welcome back. He hasn't been out, but this is definitely his best outing. He had a really good outing on Friday. Five innings pitched, four hits, no runs, two strikeouts, two walks. The splitter had great tumble, slider. He used it as a strike pitch. He used it to try to hit that outside corner, and he tried to get ahead in counts with it, and the fastball complemented all of it very well. So Kendall Williams, I know a lot of people have been asking about him. Really good outing on Friday.
Yeah, really good outing, and that's good to see, because I think this is the type of pitcher that Kendall Williams is. That pitch mix is unique. That splitter that he has can be absolutely devastating and get a lot of swings and misses. And just being able to find ways to use those pitch mixes, have that command and control aspect to his game and get a lot of hitters out. It's great to see the progression of Kendall Williams as he continues this journey throughout the minor league system. The tools, the talent are absolutely there. It's great to see for Kendall Williams all of this stuff come together.
Absolutely. So, hey, That's a lot of guys to get through. I know we had a lot of guys, but it was over the weekend. And again, if you earn it, then you get it here on Dodgers Daily, right? So it was a lot of fun to watch all this. Austin, final thoughts.
Yeah, no, that's really fun to be able to watch that, to see the level of talent that is in this system and the guys that have earned it within the system. We want to make sure that they get appropriate coverage for. And I think this I think this past week has been really a just a mindset reset and a appreciation value for me. So I know I haven't been able to go live a lot. I know I normally have my live shows on Monday. I won't be able to do it live tonight, just a little bit of transparency of what's going on. And we'll kind of tie it back into the Dodgers in just a second. I want to give a shout out to my Aunt Brenda and my cousin Cameron. Over the past couple of weeks or so, my uncle Doug has been dealing with a lot of health issues. And on Friday, we just got news. In addition to a bacterial infection, he had terminal cancer and has likely days to weeks to live. And it's been rough on my family because that's somebody that I've spent a lot of time with. And I think just taking a step back from everything, it has grown a bit of appreciation for me for everything and put things into perspective. So I know things like the Dodgers didn't close out the series against the Blue Jays on top. That was disappointing. But you look at the fact that they won six games in a row, and you can show a level of appreciation for that. You can look throughout this farm system and see the level of talent and be able to draw a little bit of appreciation for that. And in combination with my experiences with Fort Wayne, with some of the not just first-class facility, first-class announcers, first-class people as well. No and doubt. You can have a little bit of perspective and appreciation and love for this game of baseball on top of that, because there's a lot more elements than just the winning and losing. Obviously, winning and losing is the goal of the game, but being able to find those small moments, being able to enjoy every aspect of the game, don't take it for granted, because you honestly don't know how much time you have left. And that's been really cool. It's provided a grounding experience for me. It's provided a sense of appreciation, of gratitude. So continue to be thinking of them, continue to be thinking of my family during this time. I'll be trying my best to be on Dodgers Dogs. It's a good distraction for me, and I'll definitely be able to be watching these Loons games. And I couldn't be more happy to be surrounded by the best baseball community that is out there. So incredibly appreciative of you guys, appreciative of you, Casey, for the opportunities that you're able to provide. Dodgers are a really good team. They are a first-class organization. They are first-class people. I got to see a person like Austin Chubb was in the dugout for the Loons all week, who is part of this Dodgers front office right now, former manager of the Loons. I got to interact and talk with players' families, some of the bus drivers, some of my favorite people in the world, Paul, Marge, and Larry as well. All of these different people provide great perspective into this great game of baseball, Dodgers baseball. How can you not love it?
No doubt about that. So, hey, want to thank everybody for tuning in. Want to thank you, Austin, for joining. And until next time, go Dodgers!